Broadcasting nationwide and coast to coast, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American.
From the Liberty University Broadcast Studio, it's Todd Starnes.
All right, folks. Hello. Welcome to this Friday edition of the program. And it's an honor to have you with us. And, folks, it's one of those Fridays where normally we try to be a little lighthearted around this place on Friday. And normally we're poking a little bit of fun at call screener Avery. But not today. I mean, unless we really want to. Do we want to? Do we have anything to poke fun about?
I mean, I want to, just so to say the word, and we'll find something, I'm sure.
All right. We'll work on it. But by the way, call screener Avery has launched a brand new podcast, and it is getting quite a bit of attention, and a lot of people are really excited about this thing. Avery, what is the name of the podcast?
The name of the podcast is The Informative Nerd Burrito.
Why burrito?
Because you can get all your nerd news and information and general nerd talk all wrapped up in one convenient location, just like you can get all your favorite Mexican food in a burrito.
For just 99 cents at your local QT.
Except the podcast is free, so you don't have to worry about paying for it.
Oh, that's a great line, actually. I was thinking like a chalupa.
A chalupa, yeah.
Or a tostada. I don't know.
Or a gordita.
A gordita.
That's not a real Mexican dish. That's a Taco Bell dish right there.
That is real Mexican.
Good, whatever
dish.
It is.
All right. So where can folks go? I guess the live show blog. We'll post a link to the Informative Nerd Burrito starring call screener Avery. So you guys can check all that out at the website, toddstarnes.com. But that being said, we got a lot of serious stuff to talk about today, folks, and that's just the way it goes. But I'm telling you that what we are seeing unfolding right now across our country is very disturbing, and you should be alarmed, and you should be on edge, and you should be prepared to take care of and protect your property, your family. Because as we have seen unfold in Minneapolis, you cannot depend on the police being there. Especially if the police are told to stand down, which is clear to me somebody gave those orders. And we'll find out who that was. In the last hour, Kyle Hooten from the Daily Caller, who is in Minneapolis, his sources are telling him they are flying protesters into Minneapolis. And it seems to me, based on my observations, that this is an attempt by the mainstream media and Hollywood and the Democrats to create a national race war in hopes of destabilizing the country even more and trying to destroy President Trump's reelection bid. I have no doubt that that's what's happening here. No doubt whatsoever. By the way, NBC News says what you are seeing on your television screen is not a riot. It is a protest. One reporter said it was actually a rebellion. What say you, ladies and gentlemen? 844-747-8868. I want to go to Columbus, Ohio. Devin is listening to us on our Facebook live stream. And Devin, I was not aware until a few minutes before the show that there was even violence in your city last night because nobody was talking about this on the national news.
Hello, Ty. Yes, definitely was. In fact, I was ground level. It was downtown on High Street, on High and Broad Street. And what I witnessed was two different factions of people. You had people that were actually protesting quiet and peacefully. And then you had these other people who were actually trying to stir people up and get them to riot. Come to find out, these people that were doing that were not even from the city. Also, I spoke to friends who I went to school with in Minneapolis, and from what they told me is that they actually found out there was an actual Minneapolis cop setting fires to the AutoZone, and they actually confronted him, and they had them on camera.
Well, Devin, we were able to research that information, and that is what they call in the business fake news. That did not happen. That was not a police officer. And again, there is a narrative out there, though, that that the people setting all the fires are police officers. That's actually a narrative that people are talking about, but it turns out not to be true. It's fake news.
Okay. I don't know, because they're ground level there. They're actually there, so I can't.
Yeah, well, they're getting bad news. And look, and Devin, I don't fault your friends, because there's a lot of fake news out there, and you know, you have to do your research, and we do a fair bit of it, because we got those same reports, and people sent us the photographs. There's another picture circulating out there that the guy who had the knee on the neck of Mr. Floyd was a Trump supporter who was standing behind the president at a rally. It turned out to be not true. Wrong guy. But again, once the story gets out there, it's hard to walk it back. So I am curious, though. You say that from your observations, there were two factions, the normal, regular protesters, and then you had these anarchists out there. Is that about right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, that's, look, I don't have a problem with protesting. You have a constitutional right to protest. You don't have a constitutional right to go out there and burn down somebody's business and steal all of their stuff. I was hoping that I would find common ground with some of the left on that very issue, Devin, but I have not so far.
Oh, understandable. I mean, and again, it's just to clear up the misconceptions, because everyone believes that the people in that community are actually doing these things, and it's actually quite the opposite. So,
I'm not surprised. No, Devin, I'm glad you did, because, you know, we appreciate your eyewitness reporting, and it backs up something that in the last hour of the show, we had a reporter. He said his sources are telling him that they're flying in protesters to Minneapolis. And, you know, that's they're going to be up to no good. But he also said that by and large, on the first day of the protest, it appeared that most everybody was local. But now it's just a free for all out there. And that's just not acceptable. Devin, appreciate the telephone call. You stay safe out there, sir. Watch yourself out there in Ohio and really everywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Got to tell you, though, I mean, here in Memphis, Tennessee, two nights of protest. It's been peaceful. But I will say this. We are not allowed to congregate in large groups for weddings or churches. And yet the city of Memphis says it's OK to go out without a permit and protest and march in the streets in large numbers. You don't even have to wear a mask. All right, let's go to North Carolina. Bill, Moorhead City on the talk station. Hi, Bill. What's going on?
Hey, Todd, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to clarify one thing in reference to the firefighters not being seen last night. I'm a 30-year veteran, retired. Our training is not to get involved with conflict, nor are we equipped for it. So our standard protocols are to wait till the police have the scene secured, and then we go in. So just wanted to clear that up.
No, well, you know what? I appreciate you saying that, and I understand from my call screener that you are a retired firefighter. Your observations on what you saw last night on television from Minneapolis.
It was a riot, no doubt about it.
You know, I was listening to one of the reporters, and they were talking about, you know, these are not just random citizens just out there lobbing the Molotov cocktails. There was a reporter who said he actually saw these protesters starting fires at the front of the building and the back of the building. This is at the police precinct. So he said it was pretty clear to him that they knew exactly what they were doing. And, they were, engaging in an act of arson.
And blocking exits with fire.
I'm just glad the police officers got out of there. They were up on the roof at one point, and they were firing down the rubber bullets trying to stave off the invading horde. And thank goodness they got out before that building went up.
Correct. Yeah, that is good.
All right. Well, Bill, look, it's a fair point, and it's an important point. And I appreciate you giving us a call and bringing us up to speed on that. 844-747-8868. That's a toll-free number, 844-747-8868. And we are following developments not just in Minneapolis, but around the nation as this unrest continues to roil. And it could be a very, very long, hot weekend here in America. You know, one of the things that really gets me about all of this, yesterday there was a press conference, and there are, a lot of people are saying that this press conference in Minnesota actually led to the violence that transpired last night. Now, I don't know about that. But the prosecutor who is investigating the case, so let's understand what happened here. So you have the videos that came out, and the videos showed that there were four police officers. Clearly, they were not following procedure. Clearly, the guy who was had the knee to the neck of Mr. Floyd was not following procedure. It's all there. And to the best of our knowledge, there was no resisting arrest. They said, well, the guy resisted arrest, which is why they had to do it. That nobody saw that on any of the videos. And there are a lot of videos about what happened. And so you got the mayor out there saying that the police officers should all be arrested and they should be charged with murder. And again, I get it. And maybe that's going to happen. But should you not let due process happen? Should you not let the investigators get in there and find the evidence they need to charge these men with a crime, if in fact they have committed a crime? Is that wrong here? Or can I just say, I don't mean to be politically incorrect here. Or should we just say, you know what, to hell with the evidence. The mayor says, arrest the guy, charge him with murder. Arrest the guy, charge him with murder. We don't need any evidence. We don't need a jury. Why not? Why does the mayor just said, you know what, let's just go ahead and round up these police officers and we will sacrifice the police officers to the crowd, to the looters. I mean, if you're not going to have due process, if you're not going to let the investigators investigate and do their jobs, if you're not going to let the prosecutors do their jobs, why do we need to have a trial? Why do we need to have a jury? Why do we need to have a judge? The mayor's already decided these guys are guilty of murder. Just, you know what? Don't even worry about throwing them into prison. Just hand them over to the crowd. Let them take care of it. It makes no sense. And the reason I say that, so a couple of days ago, you had the mayor saying these men should be charged with murder. But the mayor made that statement, and he made that statement out of ignorance because he does not know what the evidence is. And that brings me to this soundbite I want to play for you. It's cut number one. This is the prosecutor handling the case. Cut number one.
It's a violation of my ethics to talk and evaluate evidence before we announce our charging decision. And I will not do that. I will say this, that video is graphic and horrific and terrible, and no person should do that. But my job in the end is to prove that he violated a criminal statute. And there is other evidence that does not support a criminal charge. We need to wade through all of that evidence and to come through with a meaningful determination, and we are doing that to the best of our ability. I bring the same message that African-American Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, is bringing. I'm bringing the same message of the Reverend Jesse Jackson. We have to do this right. We have to prove it in a court of law. And I will just point to you the comparison to what happened in Billy in Baltimore in the Gray case. It was a rush to charge. It was a rush to justice. And all of those people were found not guilty. I will not rush to justice. I'm going to do this right. And those folks who know me in the African community know I will do my very level best. But I will not rush justice because justice cannot be rushed.
So that's the prosecutor here. And a lot of people were infuriated by what that guy just said. And did you catch, there was about midway through this soundbite, you heard the prosecutor say there is some other evidence that suggests that there may not be a crime. So we don't know what that is. But again, does it really matter? At this point, does it really matter? Does the truth really matter? I mean, I'm just telling you, when I see that video, you know what I see? I see that police officer committing a crime. I don't know if it's murder or not, but I mean, in my again, civilian eyes, I see this as a crime. And we have heard from many law enforcement experts who share that same sentiment. But you've got the prosecutor now saying, you know what, we got some other video here, and we're not so sure. We got to make sure we got everything here. They're also telling us this is all about race. Members, leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention have already suggested this is about race. I'd like to see their evidence because we're going to read the 911 call. Oh, we got to take a break. I'm going to read the 911 call when we come back from break. And I think this is going to create a bit more controversy. We'll be right back.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
This is all about the facts, understanding what the truth is. Unfortunately, we live in a society where truth is no longer relevant. It's whatever your truth is. I've always wondered, though, what happens when your truth conflicts with my truth? Whose truth takes precedent? And that's what we're seeing happen in the mainstream media. As you had a guy last night on MSNBC, and he was saying, you know what, everything's hunky-dory around here. We got no problems. It's just a protest. By and large, everybody's peaceful. And all around this guy, you had people rioting. You had giant flames leaping up into the sky. The guy was totally clueless. Never seen anything like it. But one of the narratives coming out of all of this is that this is another case of a white police officer killing a black suspect. They're making this about race. And my first question was, well, okay, what is the evidence? Where is the evidence that the white police officer wanted to hunt down and kill a suspect because he was black? Where is the evidence? If that is true, if what they're telling us is that, yes, this police officer allegedly killed this suspect because of the color of his skin, quite frankly, I think that's a death penalty case right there. Honestly, I believe if you kill anybody, that's a death penalty case. One of the other overarching problems here is that men in America, women in America, are no longer equal under the eyes of the law. Because now you have all these identity politics cards that people play. So if you kill one person, it may be really, really bad. But if you kill another person, it may be really, 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 really bad. Crime used to be crime. Punishment used to be punishment. But that's not how it is these days. So anyway, I am curious about the motive. How do they know? How do these protesters, how do the folks on the televisions, how do the folks in City Hall and the governor's office know that this is an issue of a white police officer singling out a black person to kill? And the reason I ask that is because we were able to get ourselves a copy of the transcript. And geez-a-loo, I am just talking way too much today, guys. We're going to get to this. And I'm going to read some portions of this transcript to you. But I'm telling you, I have yet to find anything about race in this. Got to stop rushing to judgment, America. Got to do it. 844-747-8868. We'll be right back. News from Minneapolis. The mayor there, Jacob Frey, who's a far lefty, has admitted that they're giving face masks to the protesters so they don't get the coronavirus while they're burning down the buildings and throwing Molotov cocktails at the police officers. Isn't that very thoughtful of the mayor? So the mayor, according to FoxNews.com, Mayor Frey is literally giving the protesters, the rioters, a face mask. In the meantime, it's currently against the law in Minnesota to gather together in large groups inside church houses. But it's okay to gather together if you're going to go burn down a police station. just so you understand the lay of the land. 844-747-8868 is our telephone number. Want to go right now to the Liberty University Newsmaker line. Our good friend from Liberty Council, Matt Staver, who I think is almost a co-host of the program now, Matt. I mean, you're on just about every other day.
Well, thank you, Todd, and I thank you for getting out this information. You know, somebody asked me, is anyone reporting all the details of what's happening in Chicago regarding these Romanian churches? And I said, well, there's one that I know that's doing a very good job, and that's Todd Starnes. So thank you for your reporting.
Well, you're kind to say that, and you make my job real easy because you guys are boots on the ground defending these churches, and we have some very exciting news to share with the listening audience today.
Yeah, what we did was late Wednesday afternoon, about 3:30, we filed an emergency petition with the U.S. Supreme Court. Within 2.5 hours of that, Wednesday night around 6 o'clock, the Supreme Court ordered the state of Illinois, the governor of Illinois, to file its response 8 o'clock last night, 8 p.m. last night. Well, this is the governor who said 12 to 18 months before you churches are going to be on phase 5, and you can not expect to have anything north of 50 before 18 months. Right now it's 10 across the board, and I'm not budging on that. And by the way, there's a new wave coming, and so we don't know. We may even get more strict. Well, within four hours of having that deadline to be accountable to the Supreme Court last night, this governor completely lifted all the restrictions, all of them, Todd, on houses of worship. He didn't go from where he was to an intermediate level. He lifted all the restrictions, and he did that so that he could moot the case at the Supreme Court. And some of the people, and certainly what we know, is the reason why he did it, he was afraid of a showdown at the United States Supreme Court that would set the precedent against him and other oppressive governors. So they filed their brief last night. And sure enough, they said, well, it's moot. Sorry, we bothered you. But they ended up defending the orders. So we filed a reply this morning and said, it's not moot. We can't trust this man. He issued these orders. He now says, well, they're gone regarding churches and houses of worship. But he did it because he's got to be held accountable by this court. He didn't want to be. And it's capable of returning again. And he's threatened that he will do this again. And so we have to ultimately have some protection from the court so that he never does this unconstitutional act again. So that's where we stand right now.
You know, if nothing else, Matt, I think this episode has demonstrated that religious liberty is always under attack. And that's why we have to remain very diligent as we go through these kinds of crises.
Right, exactly. And here's the other thing, Todd, that it illustrates. What happened between May 19 and even during this litigation, and what happened between just a few days ago, what happened last Saturday where they sent out the letter threatening to demolish the churches with summary abatement, what's changed? Did the landscape change? Did the medical threat change? Did the virus change? Did the numbers change? No, nothing changed. What changed? He had to give an account of his unconstitutional acts before the highest court in the land. That's the only thing that changed. And now all of a sudden, voila, no restrictions. So you have to really go back and say, why were there restrictions in the first place? If you don't have any justification within 4 hours of your time to be brought into the principal's office, then you didn't have any justification before that. And this is the epicenter. This is the, I should say, the example, if you will, of tyranny, where they just, on their own, just impose these restrictions, but they have no basis for doing so until someone holds them accountable.
All right. On the Newsmaker line, our good friend Matt Staver from Liberty Council, a religious liberty warrior, ladies and gentlemen, celebrating a big victory in the state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln. Matt, over in Minnesota, where they're dealing with a lot of problems right now, but beyond that, many of the good church-going people there are not going to be able to congregate in their church houses in large numbers indefinitely. Nobody knows when. And we're hearing that from other places around the country. Yeah. What do you say to those congregations?
Well, I say, you know, enough is enough. I have not come across any order from any of these governors or local politicians restricting churches that are constitutional. None of them. So they're all unconstitutional. And the problem is that they continue to try to enforce these until you challenge them, and they back down, like this governor in Illinois. So that's on the one hand. They're not constitutional. They're not based in any law. In fact, they're against the law, and they have no authority in that respect. So you have to make a decision. Is enough enough? And, you know, that's up to the individual churches and the pastors and the leaders there. And a lot of them have. And, for example, in California, several thousand churches and other places around the country are saying enough is enough. Irrespective of these unconstitutional orders, it's more important to meet together to be healthy, to be safe, yes, but to exercise our rights and to be able to meet together as a community. We can't continue to do this online, and so we're just going to do it. And that's what has been happening around the country. That's some of the pastors we represent. And that's the movement that really is nationally on Pentecost, just in a couple of days from now. Churches all over the country in these very oppressive states where they still have these oppressive orders are just saying, we've had enough. We've tried to be good citizens, but no more. We're going to move forward, exercise our constitutional rights and our right to worship. Look, the Supreme Court, Todd, in 1947, way back then, said this: if the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment means, the Establishment Clause at a minimum of the First Amendment means this, that no state or federal government can force someone to attend church or, get this, to stay away from church against his will. That's the United States Supreme Court, and that's what's happening, and they have no authority to do it anymore, and they never had it in the first place.
All right, Matt Staver, we're going to have to leave it there. Where can folks go if they want to get involved, if they want to send some money, help support the incredible mission at Liberty Council?
They can go to our website, lc.org, lc.org, and also reopenchurch.org for the ideas and process to begin opening your church safely, but also moving forward with that in-person service. Reopenchurch.org and lc.org is where they can go to donate and learn more.
All right, Matt, thank you again. Have a great weekend and exciting news. Congratulations.
Thank you. God bless.
Matt Staver, ladies and gentlemen, reopenchurch.org if you want to get involved. And isn't it great that you have organizations out there that are willing to stand up and fight for people of faith in America? And I'm proud to call Matt Staver a friend and just a great, great guy. Look, a lot of people want to weigh in on what's happening out in Minneapolis. We're going to get right back to that. First, we have to take a break. 844-747-8868. Andy in Little Rock, Tony in New Bern, North Carolina. Hang tight. We're getting to your calls next. We'll be right back.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
This is mostly a protest. It is not, generally speaking, unruly, but fires have been started.
What is that guy smoking? That was one of the MSNBC guys standing in front of a raging inferno. People are literally rioting behind the guy, running around with the flat screen TVs and chasing police officers down the street. And he's saying, well, everything's fine. It's like Disneyland out here.
Well, if they lit the local pot shop on fire behind him, that would explain maybe his take on the situation.
Well, if that was the case, the whole crowd would have been mellow. They would have been sitting around eating, you know, bags of Cheetos or, I don't know, burritos maybe. Never mind. By the way, call screener Avery, brand new podcast, The Informative Nerd Burrito.
Oh, yeah.
The Informative Nerd Burrito. And what we need to do, Avery, is post a photograph of yourself alongside the actual burrito.
Oh.
Because there is a striking resemblance.
Okay.
Yo quiero toddstarnes.com.
Ay, caramba. All right, let's get back to the phones. 844-747-8868. Andy, North Little Rock, Arkansas, K-A-R-N. Andy, what's on your mind?
How's it going, Todd?
Doing pretty good, Andy.
Thank you for asking. The thing I wanted to get into, you know, they talked about that prosecutor said that there may not be nothing criminal as far as what that cop did. I'm going to agree that what he did was bad, but the key thing is where his knee was placed. His knee was placed on his neck to where it was not restricting the flow, his ability to breathe. So that tells me, I mean, if you sit and watch the video real close, it's on the muscular part back part of his neck. It's not anywhere near his jugular. It's not on his jugular. It's not on his esophagus. There's no constriction of his airway. So him saying he can't breathe, there's an underlying factor. He was either having a heart attack, asthma, or something else. And
there was a police chief in some community in the South, I believe, and he pointed out this fact. He said, if you've got a suspect saying you can't breathe, he's actually able to breathe because he's able to take breaths to speak, I guess was the point the guy was trying to make. And they killed the guy. They crucified the guy in the media. But to your point, I think I see where you're going with that.
I mean, I agree, and the autopsy is going to tell it all, but I don't think that he should be charged with murder. I don't think it's going to come to that because his knee placement was not on his neck in a way that constricted his airflow, and that's probably going to make a lot of people mad, but I don't care.
So you don't think the cop committed murder?
No, I do not. I do not. And just looking at it, looking at it how I looked at it and watched it over and over and over, and then I watched where his knee placement was and where how his leg was angled back. His weight of his body was on that. The angle of his leg was catching the weight of his body toward the back. If you look, his neck is not compressed. It's not, like you put your knee on somebody's neck and you're going to be able to see the dip in the neck just due to the soft tissue. But where his knee is on the muscular part back of the neck, and it was not constricting his airflow in any way. I mean,
so
just
you're
like
saying
you said,
if the guy,
saying,
you know, if the, so if the guy was he, laying said, on his back and you're putting your knee on the front part, that would be problematic.
Yeah, that would be problematic. But the guy sitting there hollering two or three times, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe." Well, you're breathing, you're talking, and so I'm thinking there's an underlying thing in there that he had some kind of health problem going on, but the cop shouldn't be charged with murder. And at the maybe lose his job for maybe going
against
policy
been fired.
Or something. But,
been fired. And again, that there is a policy, and that this is an interesting component here. Now, according to KSTP, which is the ABC affiliate in Minneapolis, there is a policy. A police policy that would allow a police officer to put pressure on a suspect's neck to render that person unconscious. It's called the unconscious neck restraint. And they have very strict rules and regulations governing when that can be used and who can use it. So you have to go through some sort of special training. So the question is, did the officer have that training? If he did have that training, did he follow all of the protocols? I mean, again, these are questions that have to be investigated. They have to be asked. But you've got the mayor out there saying, you know what? Guilty of murder. I mean, come on. You can't do that in America. All right, Andy, thank you for your call. 844-747-8868. Let's go to Tony in New Bern, North Carolina. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Hey, Todd, thank you for asking.
Good. Hey, look, what I wanted to bring up, I'm a former corrections officer for the state of North Carolina. I've got about 5 years' experience. We are trained in hands-on combat when we go to school to be a corrections officer, much the same as a police officer that goes to basic law enforcement training to become a police officer. We're all trained in hands-on. And when I worked at the prison, I know you're a murderer. I know you're a child molester. But I still speak to you. I say, sir, when I speak to you. We're also trained that you only use the force necessary to control the situation. As an experienced law enforcement or corrections officer, I'm going to use my verbal skills to try to control the situation. My tools that I have are my handcuffs, my pepper spray, and my collapsible baton. And I'm going to use my voice first. If I have to put my hands on you or you're coming at me, I'll pull out my pepper spray, spray you. The gentleman that was on the ground with the officer with his knee on his neck was not fighting that officer. He was not threatening his life. As a corrections officer, I'm trained, if I'm going to put my knee on you, I'm going to put it in between your shoulder blades, not your neck. We are also trained in a neck grab where you wrap our arm completely around you and we squeeze it. And when we do, it will knock you out in 10 to 15 seconds.
Tony, I was reading through the 911 call, and the person who called 911 said, "Hey, something's not right with this guy. He's not in control of himself. He's awfully drunk." That was the words of the person calling in the 911 call. It was not the police officer. I believe it was the store owner. So they're having this ongoing conversation, and he's explaining they gave him the counterfeit info. And the caller goes back and says, he is not acting right. Something's not right about this guy.
I've been in situations in the prison where the guy wasn't acting right. He might have had a mental problem, what have you. But again, I'm only going to use the force necessary. I might spray you. I'm going to put you on the ground. I'm going to handcuff you. I'm going to stand you up. And then it's my responsibility to get you to segregation, what is now called restrictive housing, safely. But that excessive use of force, that's what that officer did. If I did that in a prison, it's called use of force. There's going to be an immediate investigation. They're going to look at the videotape. And if I were using too much force, I could be fired and charged, legally charged. It would probably happen in quick succession.
Tony, I've got about 30 seconds here, Tony. I've got about 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you a question. Based on what you've seen, do you think those police officers were acting appropriately and according to protocol?
No. The man was on the ground. He was handcuffed. They could have lifted him up, put him into the car. That would have been the end of the situation. We would not have all the stuff that's going on in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's what I didn't understand. No. That. Why you've got four police officers charged. The guy's not. He's not hostile.
He was a security officer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a known person to be violent.
I don't get it. That
was the wrong protocol. Very wrong protocol. Excessive use of force, and they should be charged.
All right, Tony. Hey, look, thank you. This is very helpful information. Tony, a caller from New Bern, North Carolina on The Talk Station, a former corrections officer, and giving us some great insight. Folks, we're opening up the phone lines for the next hour of the show. Also following breaking news from coast to coast, border to border, 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. That's 844-747-8868. This is The Todd Stern Show.